on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, June 26, 2025 edition, and I'm excited for this hour with you unpacking the market that just keeps on chugging. And we're going to look at some economic data as well as discuss kind of the rumors that are driving a bit more bullish sentiment. And then we're going to bring you data and perspective that you can take back to your own personal situation and make better decisions. And we'll also be answering your finance and investment questions. So we have plenty of those already submitted, but we always welcome more. So don't hesitate to reach out with your question. As always, the same number is 888-99-CHART. Now, in just a bit, I'm going to talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was hoping you guys could take a look at Canadian Natural Resources. It's ticker CNQ. I've taken some time off from the podcast. So if you guys recently answered this, I apologize. But I'm looking at it, and I'm curious what you guys think. Thanks. Bye.
All right, looking at Canadian Natural Resources. And this is actually a name we own for clients, and it's certainly doing much better than the broader energy space. In fact, it's above its 200-day moving average as of today. Whereas if you look at like the XLE, you know, broad energy ETF, that's below its 100-day moving average, despite the nice update today as well. And it's still kind of in a downtrend, whereas CNQ, Canadian Natural Resources, has been in an uptrend really since the bottom in, let's see, when did it bottom? In April, around was $25 per share. Now we're up to $31 and change, almost $32 today. So the trends are certainly better than most within the space. So that's the first thing you have to like about the name. And I think one great thing about Canadian Natural Resources is it's probably the best run Canadian oil and gas E&P company. And due to its heft and its scale, but also has access to the pipeline, the new pipeline that heads out to the West Coast for export to China and the rest of the world, for example. And I think it's going to unlock a better pricing for those that have access to that pipeline. And Canadian Natural Resources certainly has that. You see that last quarter, revenues are up 33%, earnings are up 71%. So, it's still challenged a bit because of the broader pricing of crude and natural gas that's, relatively weak recently. But if you're looking to gain exposure to the oil and gas space, I think this is a great way to play it. So I'm going to give CNQ a thumbs up. Obviously, we own it, and it's one of our favorite names within the space. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and this is what we have planned. So our main focus point is about tariffs. And back in 2018, 2019, President Trump, in his first term, he imposed tariffs on China. Now, they weren't nearly as large as what has been proposed today, but they did have impact on trade. But it mainly was diverted to Mexico in a big way. So we'll look at that impact and how much of the current trade war will also be resolved by corporations through this trade diversion strategy. So we'll look at that and those numbers after they've been studied for the last 7 years or so. Now, we also have other topics on the docket as well. One is in regards to banks and why there might be more and more consolidation within the banking industry as we go forward. Also, nuclear power. Nuclear power is on the rise. And guess what? It looks like we're going to get our first new nuclear power plant in a long while. So we'll look at that story as well. And if we have time, we'll dig into more about the arms race within the AI market and the cloud market. And so we'll dig into who might be the winners and losers there as well. We also have questions submitted via our Anytime Voice Bank, and A-Lab, A-L-A-B, is one we will get to, one question, and then DOC, Health Peak Properties. Those will be two questions that we hopefully get to by the end of the hour. We also have comments that came in, questions that came in via the comments section over on the Best Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your live calls, 888-99-CHART. Those are always top of mind. You are top priority. If you call, you're talking to me live, you will be put into the front of the line. So don't hesitate to reach out. Once again, 888-99-CHART. Now we're going to a short break, and on the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity and answer more of your questions here on Invest Talk.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in five delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those five indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every two scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava. KACHAVA.com. Code INVEST for 15% off.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go look at the market activity for today. It was a very bullish day, mainly for small caps, though. Small caps were up about 1.5%, depending on which small cap index you're looking at. Broadly, the Dow was up nearly 1%. Same with the NASDAQ. S&P was up about 0.8% on the day. Notable movers in other asset classes, copper did very well. Dollar was down about 0.5%. That certainly was helpful. Gold finished up 0.2%. The Bitcoin was down 0.2%. WTI crude is up about 0.5% in a choppy session. Rates were down, and there's more rumors that Trump will potentially put his nomination for the next Fed president up early and kind of allow that person to be a mouthpiece and give forward guidance, you know, from the bench, right? He won't be in the seat until May of next year. but certainly he can have an influence on future policy expectations by saying X, Y, and Z. That's kind of what the market is looking at. Now, on the economic front, you had initial jobless claims and continuing claims. Now, initial jobless claims actually were a bit better, 236,000, consensus was 245,000. So that looked a bit better. However, always said this, that's only half of the picture. That's just who's getting laid off. Also, the other half is how many people are getting jobs. And that's why the continuing claims gives you the fuller picture. You get this every week, every Thursday. So something everyone should be watching. It's highly correlated. Continuing claims is highly correlated with the unemployment rate. So when that goes up, you typically see the unemployment rate rise as well. And now you're starting to see that really break out. It was in a range around 1.85 million on the continuing claims for a while. And recently that's broke above 1.9, and hit 1.95 last week, 1.95 million. And then this week you saw it go up to 1.974. So you're only about 25,000 jobs away from that 2 million mark. And I think that will be a clear indication that the labor market is suffering and is turning. And I think you see that in the housing data. You see that in the auto sales data. That's kind of lining up with how people are feeling about their labor prospects, which has really taken a stair step lower over the past couple of months, really post-Liberation Day. Companies have mostly frozen hiring. There's been a lot of layoffs, but, and you can see that in the initial claims, right? It's not really, it's moved up, but only marginally, but it's the continuing claims that have broken out. And it means that companies, due to the uncertainty, have just paused. They've stopped hiring in a lot of ways. And that's what the data is really telling us. On the durable goods front, that did come out today, and that was a bit better than expected. So we're at least fine on that front. And then consumer consumption revised lower from 1.2 to 1.5. So that was not great, missing consensus. So you don't want to see that. Core PCE is expected tomorrow. And you have pending home sales that beat 1.8% month over month versus expectations of 0.5. So that was a bit of a positive there. So some mixed data on the economy, but I think the most important is that labor data, and that continues to get weaker. So that was the market today. You have some new data, like I said, over tomorrow that you'll get more clarity on inflation, all of that. And then next week, I think that's where more fireworks to come. You have the non-farm payrolls that will be big headlines, and that comes out next week. So, and we have a holiday shortened week with 4th of July as well. So that was the market today. And from time to time, we get questions submitted over on the Best Luck YouTube channel. And so let's go answer one of those questions now. Ugar says, hello, can I have your thoughts on owning the stock? EFX, EFX. And let me pull that up here. So EFX is Equifax, organizes and manages credit, financial, public data, marketing, demographic information, etc. Problem is that earnings expectations for this year and next year are coming down. Growth has slowed from 11% revenue growth in the fourth quarter of 2023. To last quarter, revenue growth was only 4%. Earnings growth was only 2%. So you had growth slowing considerably, and you're trading at a hefty multiple. So it's supposed to earn $7.60 roughly this year on a $255 stock. So you're talking about a mid-30s multiple. That's pretty high. Now, obviously, Equifax is a good business, but if the economy slowing, if the labor market's slowing, what does that mean for applications for loans? Certainly, Equifax will struggle in that environment and their profits will be reduced. So I don't like the lack of growth. It looks like cash flow is peaking out. Let me look at a chart here. Well, that's not pulling up for me. So I'll wait on the chart. But My point here is I would rather own this name coming out of economic recession not potentially going into a recession over the next 12 months or so. So I would keep it on my watch list. It's certainly a good business, solid cash flow, good balance sheet, all of that. But, you know, it's very middling right now, and timing wise is not great either. Oh, my charts did pull up and it's been a downtrend. Yeah. So I see no reason fundamentally. It's not cheap. The technicals peaked out back in September of last year and it's been headed lower. So I'm going to give Equifax keep on the bench. Don't throw it away. Don't forget about it, but keep it on the bench. Thanks for the call. Let's squeeze in another caller question now.
Hello, guys. I wanted to know what you guys thought of Palantir, PLTR, for a long-term hold, and if now is a good time to start a small position in it. Thank you.
All right, looking at Palantir, and this is one of those names that it's always kind of sleazy to me when a CEO is hyping the stock, and certainly that's what this is. This is not a value play. This is a play on them infiltrating our defense departments and becoming the go-to software and technology for the defense department. And that may be what happens, right? And their earnings may explode when that happens. But as of right now, their earnings are nowhere close to making this an attractive price to pay. $144 stock, and it's only earning this year 58 cents, next year 73 cents. It's just egregiously overpriced. This is a momentum play. It's for your retail investor. And it's, if you want to ride the momentum, great, but this is not an investment. It's just a speculative momentum play. And if that's what you're looking for, great, but that's not how we invest. Now we're moving to a break. Still to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call right now to InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at investtalkstore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point on today's show is about how U.S. tariffs on China boosted Mexican exports and employment. And it's not talking about right now. We're talking about 2018 and 2019 is when the Trump 1.0 administration hiked tariffs on imports from China. Now, it was relatively minor, but it did cause what you call in the industry trade diversion, meaning you didn't onshore that manufacturing, but you nearshored it. Okay. And for the United States and United States companies, the go-to is Mexico. Why? Because they have a lot of natural resources. And most importantly, they have a demographic that is attractive, actually much better than China. We know China is an aging population. They're actually working age population is in decline, whereas Mexico has a lot of young workers. And so a lot of, frankly, cheaper labor. A lot of people think China is cheap labor. China is not cheap labor. Okay, their average, if I remember looking it up, their average factory worker makes more than our minimum wage. I think it was around 8-something on average. And so it's not a cheap place to get labor. It's just more about the infrastructure and the skills and all of that. But Mexico, cheaper labor than obviously here and China. Good proximity to the United States. And the impact on the labor market there was profound. What they found was there is estimated that a 25% point increase in U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods would create a 4.2% increase in exports of Mexican goods to the United States. Okay, so if you put a 25% tariff on China, which is much higher right now, you're going to get a 4.2% increase in exports to the United States from Mexico. So this can be very profound. And what it found, for every 1% increase in exports to the U.S., it increased wages on average by about 0.1%. So about a half a percent, 4.2 would be about half a percent increase in wages within Mexico. And what this is really saying is it's going to help Mexico. These tariffs are going to help Mexico. And that's why I think it's a great place to invest. It's just clearly there's going to be more economic opportunity in Mexico. And there's the workforce to take advantage of it. Now, it is also helping more the lower end worker as well. Mainly female workers, unskilled workers, younger workers. Those are the ones that will benefit or have benefited the most since 2018 and 19. And when the tariffs were implemented in 2018, about 21% of U.S. imports were coming from China. And about 13% were coming from Mexico. And that has converged. And now we actually import more from Mexico than we do from China. And that was pretty persistent. That trend was pretty persistent, both under Trump 1.0 as well as the Biden administration. Because remember, President Biden kept those tariffs on that the initial Trump administration had enacted. And in some cases, he actually increased them. Now, there was more targets. It wasn't as broad-based as the current ones. Obviously, the current tariffs are much more draconian, much more broad-based, and is going to have more wide-ranging impacts. But that is this data is a clear indication that there will be plenty of winners from these tariffs. It just means that there's a lot of change happening, and you have to adjust to that change that is happening in the global economy. Now, the next invest stock, we'll look into the story. Will housing prices drop? 2025 outlook as home inventory rises. U.S. home inventory has climbed nearly 20% year over year, and forecasts now suggest national home prices will either remain flat or see a slight decline over the next year. I tend to agree with it. That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls on 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about HealthSeek, ticker DOC. It's a REIT that pays a nice dividend. I find it to be a little undervalued, and I like its face with the increasing age of the population. They deal with medical facilities, and they have, I believe, some nursing homes in the portfolio as well. Wanted to get your opinions if this would be a good long term. Know what you guys do, and looking forward to hearing your answer on the chat. Thank you.
All right, looking at HealthPeak Properties Incorporated, and this is it a REIT? Yep, it is a REIT that owns and develops healthcare. Life science, senior housing, and medical office tenants. It is down considerably. Relative strength is 18%, and that's always a red flag. Did I say 8%? The relative strength is 18. It's not expressed as a percentage. And the main reason is the debt. About $8.9 billion in long-term debt. Free cash flow, only $1.2 billion. And a lot of that cash flow, most of the cash flow is paid out to shareholders in the form of that dividend. you know, that's my biggest issue is that level of debt. I do like the demographic aspect here, right? Aging population, like you said, certainly life science is a challenge. However, you know, the fact that biotechs are struggling, part of it's higher cost of capital, others, the new regulatory regime under RFK and the ability to get certain drugs passed, for example. So there's some headwinds to that industry. Skilled nursing, post-acute care that usually is covered by Medicare, you know, that's could potentially, that it looks to be cutting funding as well, potentially. So, you know, there's some issues there. It's just certainly, it's high risk. And you're probably after that 7% dividend yield, which looks attractive. But, you know, if the debt continues to power to the upside, can they really long-term afford that? And I've seen a lot of REITs out there that, you know, the gift has a juicy dividend, but the underlying customers are not that great, right? Their tenants are companies that have bad balance sheets themselves. And that would be my worry about this. And that's what the market is kind of telling you, right? When everything looks good on the surface, but the price of the stock continues to head lower, you kind of have to wake up and pay attention and not get blinded by what looks cheap. Most of the time, 90% of the time, when you have something that looks great in the fundamentals, but the chart is just continuing to head lower, that is what we call a value trap. There's something else going on here. And you want to wake up and take notice. So until the momentum can shift, I wouldn't own it. I just think there's too many unknowns. There's better opportunities out there. And it's probably paying a high dividend for a very good reason, because their business is slowing and slowing dramatically. This year, earnings are only supposed to be up, or funds from operation are only supposed to be up 2%. Next quarter, revenue is supposed to fall 1%. Funds for operations supposed to be down 70%. So you have a lot of issues here, too many red flags in my book. So I would pass on DOC Health Peak Properties. Now let's keep going and knock down two in a row from 888-99 chart.
Hi, this is Gaurav from San Jose. I love listening to your show. I was interested in getting your opinion about Astera Labs, ALAB. I was thinking of putting that into my portfolio and wanted to get your thoughts on it. Thank you. Bye.
All right, looking at ALAB, which is Astera Labs. And let me pull it out here. Just looking at a chart. Okay, this is in the semiconductor industry. And it, let's see. It looks like it's has solutions for data networking, memory management in AI-driven platforms. So that's what's really driving the growth here. Earnings expectations, let me pull this up here, for this year, $1.35, up from 82 cents last year, so up 65%, but then only $1.72 next year. So slowing growth up to 27% growth next year. It's trading at a very high multiple. It's a recent IPO, IPO about a year ago. It had a large pullback from about 150 all the way down to $50 per share. So you can see how volatile it can be. The technicals are okay right now. I just don't know if this is a reasonable price. It doesn't seem like a reasonable price to me. $16 billion market cap. They have a good balance sheet, so $3 billion in cash, but free cash flow, only $100 million. That's not great. Price of sales at 32. I just think it's too overvalued in my book. Name to keep on my watch list potentially for a better price to see if it can grow into that multiple. But until then, I'm passing on, especially with that slowdown in growth next year. I'm not paying 32 times sales for a company that's only growing earnings at 27%. That is, it's not commensurate. I need earnings doubling, tripling, you know, year after year, so that I know in 5 years, in 10 years, it's going to grow into that. It's not going to grow into that multiple at 27% earnings growth. Okay. Thanks for the call. Let's touch on banks. And I've said this around Silicon Valley bank crisis time, it was a little over 2 years ago now, that it's pretty clear that going forward, there's going to be more consolidation in the banking industry. Most other developed nations, they don't have a lot of banks. Dozen, couple dozen larger banks, and that's it. Here we have hundreds, if not thousands, of regional banks, small banks. And now with the way the regulatory environment is going, it makes it more advantageous for banks to have scale. And regulators are starting to approve a lot of these mergers. You've seen that recently with Capital One and Discover. It's probably the big, most profile one, high profile one. And competition is intensifying. And technology, right? Investing in technology, especially AI, that is getting more and more expensive. Now, right now, AI or consolidation is pretty minimal. There have been only 78 mergers this year, on track for one of the lowest annual totals in decades. But there are many within the new Trump administration that are starting to speak out and basically from the sidelines, green light more M&A activity. You know, post-financial crisis, the worry was that their banks would get too big. They would be too, you know, when you get too large, they're systematically too risky. And so you don't want a lot of consolidation. But that, under this new administration, is starting to change. Now, one thing is needed is economic clarity, though. That's why mergers so far this year have been so low, despite that rhetoric. Now, there's already talks of mergers from like BNY and Northern Trust. They're looking at potentially combining. So some kind of mid-sized banks, larger regional banks are looking at this. And, you know, like I said at the top, the U.S. is one of the most fragmented banking sectors in the world. There's just under 4,500 banks. And the vast majority are relatively small, about $10 billion in assets. And over the past 4 years, the pace of this M&A has dropped by more than 50%, averaging only 173. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity in these smaller banks. Now, there's also a lot of landmines because some of them can be poorly run, like a Silicon Valley Bank. But it's pretty clear that the FDIC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, they're the two main regulators of, as well as the Fed, of U.S. banks. And they've already signaled more and more support here. So I think there's some opportunity, maybe, and I think it's a lot too with those medium-sized banks that can go in and find great synergy, find great opportunity, bring a lot of those smaller banks into their fold and create more scale. US Bank as well as PNC are a couple that are in kind of in that sweet spot where they're large enough to be able to go and buy and be serial acquirers, but they're not so large like a JP Morgan or a Bank of America, et cetera, that the regulators might get scared. So I think that's where it's going to come from, is those medium to large banks buying up the medium to small banks. And so if you're looking at the banking industry, adding financials to your portfolio, you have to understand that regulatory backdrop and that trend that I think is ready to be sparked. It just takes some economic clarity for that to happen. Let's go with another YouTube question. Cookie Production says, hey guys, I'm looking to buying Udemy. But before I do, I was wondering why it keeps getting battered down because I can't find that many negative points. Well, as I said with that other caller, when, and this is UDMY is the symbol, when the relative strength is low, right now this is 17, and it's in a downtrend, there's a good reason for this. The market's not selling it off for no reason. Now, they could be off to a degree. Maybe it goes too far. That's always a potential. But there's the market's giving a red flag here. And that red flag is that it's just earned 44 cents this year. It's a $7 stock. So it's a mid-teens multiple, but growth is slowing. Last quarter, revenues were only up 2%. This next quarter, earnings or revenues are only up 1%. The following quarter, revenues are actually supposed to be down 2%. So it's very slow growth. So it's trading at a high multiple, and now growth is slowing. Now, what do they do for everyone else out there? It's an online learning platform for companies, governments, nonprofits, businesses, etc. I actually remember this company a decade ago. I feel like I knew somebody in leadership. It's headquartered in San Francisco. I can't remember. It's been a little while, but I knew a lot about it, and I actually liked the leadership. And obviously, they did fairly well. They went public back in 2021, but it has been down ever since. It went IPO in the mid to high 20s, and now we're at $7 per share. So certainly, the stock has not performed very well. Now, the question would be, is it cheap enough at these prices with even with the slow growth? And I would probably say, yeah, I think it's a reasonable valuation. Let me just pull this up here. Let me look at its balance sheet and profitability, all of that. There we go. So yeah, return equity is negative 30%. That's my biggest issue. It does have a lot of cash on its balance sheet, so that's good. Free cash flow is $27 million, but even based on enterprise value of $673 million, that's not a great free cash flow yield. It's just not profitable enough for me. Not throwing off enough cash flow. Like I said, return equity is negative 29%. Don't love that. It's gotten better, but it's still negative. And so, yeah, I'm passing on it. I don't like the profitability metrics. I like the balance sheet, but I don't like the trends in the stock. It just continues to move lower. And that's always a red flag for me. So until it can gain better momentum, especially in the weekly chart, probably needs to get above the 100-week moving average, which is all the way up around 950 or so. I think this is a name you may continue to watch, but I would stay on the sidelines with it. Now, this is InvestDoc with more than 61 million downloads. Thanks to you. And here comes a fresh listener question from our 24/7 voice bank. That number is always 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Daniel out in Washington State. Thank you guys for all that you do. I had a question about Marvell Technology, stock ticker's MRVL. Wanted to get some exposure to the semiconductor space and thought this might be a good one. Want to get your thoughts on it. Thank you, guys.
All right, looking at Marvell Technology, earnings supposed to be up 78% this year to $2.79 from $1.57 last year. And they design microprocessors and semiconductors for data centers, networking, telecom, consumer markets, etc. Now, there's a lot of names you can choose from in the chip space. We tend to like more of the chip equipment manufacturers versus those that are marketing and selling the chips. Historically, Marvell doesn't have very good profitability. Return equity is now negative. Free cash flow is $1.3 billion, but on an enterprise value of $68 billion. It's not a very good free cash flow yield. Don't love that. And earnings historically are all up and down. They're what we call a price taker. They don't have really a strong competitive advantage. So if you're looking to gain exposure to the semiconductor space, I just don't see this as an exciting name because of that history of profitability. The only thing I like about it is the space that it's in as well as the balance sheet, but it's not enough for me to fire on it because there's others within the space that have those characteristics as well. So I'm gonna pass on Marvell. I would look elsewhere within the semi space. Well, this is InvestDoc. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break, so get your questions in right now. And don't forget to cruise over to the new InvestDoc store. It's open now on InvestDoc. store.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
This is Art from Tucson. I'm calling about Dick's Sporting Goods, DKS. Looks like it's way down, and wondering if this is a good time to get in or if this stock has further to fall. And I'll listen on the podcast. Thank you.
All right, looking at Dick's Sporting Goods, and this is one of the largest big box retailers in the sporting goods space here in the United States, and they recently purchased Foot Locker. Okay. So a lot of consolidation within that space, and let me take a look at earnings this year. It's supposed to be $14.28, up 2% from last year. Up another 6% expected next year. And those estimates are headed higher. So that's positive. A 2.5% dividend yield. Let's take a look at their balance sheet. Yeah, pretty much no debt on their balance sheet. Decent cash flow, about $350 million on a $15 billion market cap. It's only about 2% free cash flow yield. So that's kind of one issue. But the return on equity, pretty high, 38%. So that's come down from its COVID peak, but still very healthy. And they're taking that cash and they continue to buy back shares. Now that's slowed down recently, probably because free cash flow has, let's take a look at that. That's slowed down as well. That's probably my biggest issue. That's peaked out. Now this is an anomaly here, $2 billion in 2021. That's not realistic. Okay, but getting back to pre-COVID levels around, you know, $500-600 million in free cash flow, I think that would be reasonable, and I think that would be a good value at that point. But why is free cash flow declining so much? That would be my biggest worry. Obviously, there was a lot of pent up or brought forward of demand during COVID when people were trying to get outside. They were trying to, you know, take up new hobbies, activities, went camping, etc. And Dick's was a place where people went to buy gear. They have a lot of that gear. And I think that's what their challenge is right now. But I like their profitability. It's starting to reverse from a low off around 175. So the technicals are getting a bit better. Estimates, like I said, are going higher. Good balance sheet. I like it because how many people are starting new big box sporting goods stores? It's not something. And usually what happens when people don't have much competition or companies don't have much competition anymore, especially from new entrants, they do pretty well. They can keep the prices relatively high. And if people want something now, as opposed to waiting for it on Amazon, they want to go try on shoes. They want to go swing that golf club. They want to go feel that baseball glove, whatever. It's kind of the go-to place for it. So I'm going to give Dick's Sporting Goods a thumbs up. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's touch on nuclear power. And this is coming from New York, of all the places you wouldn't think. But the governor, Kathy Hochul, I don't know how to say it, but she said in an interview that she has directed the state's public electric utility to add at least 1 gigawatt of new nuclear power generation to its aging fleet of reactors. Okay, and the New York Power Authority will find a site in upstate New York and determine the reactor's design. And this could be the first new reactor we've had in a long, long time. Only 5 new commercial reactors have come online since 1991. Okay, and that's been more than offset by actual closures, okay, closures of nuclear plants. Now, Trump administration has ordered outline plans to overhaul the U.S. nuclear regulator, fast-tracking licenses for new projects, boosting domestic fuel supply, and use federal lands for reactors for military or large data centers to power AI. So this is coming from the White House, And it's actually, they're actually a state that's taking him up on this and working with it. And nuclear generation capacity is down more than 4% since 2012. But it still accounts for about 19% of the country's electricity. So it is important. And this is, I think, the start of the, remember, China's building dozens and dozens of plants. And we need to get there. We need to keep up in order to stay competitive globally. And I still think this is a sign that the nuclear renaissance is here. Well, I'm Justin Klein. This concludes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes. And if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, taxes, retirement, whether it's all really working for you, let's talk about it. Schedule a no-cost portfolio review with me by heading over to investtalk.com. Click on portfolio review. Independent thinking, showed success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.